This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington. And coming up later today on All Things Considered, Josh Bolton, the White House Chief of Staff, tells NPR's Melissa Block what lies ahead for the White House on Iraq.
We just need to recognize that we're leaning into something of a headwind. And what we can do here at the White House is do everything we can, A, to make that war on terror go as well as it possibly can. And I believe that's reflected in the president's new way forward in Iraq. And B, we can try to explain it as well as we can to the American public.
You can hear the rest of that interview and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, it's Science Friday. Guest host Joe Palca will be here with a look at the importance of infections and why we need them to live, plus the latest news on the search for new cancer treatments. That's all tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. And now, a special edition of The Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
We thought there'd be no better way to conclude NPR's special Crossing the Divide series than with a dose of the week in partisan politics. Besides, Ken Rudin was lost in West Virginia yesterday. And what a week it is. John Kerry announced he will not run for president. The Scooter Libby trial begins here in Washington. Dick Cheney gets feisty with CNN's Wolf Blitzer plus the State of the Union, according to George W. Bush. If you have questions or comments about the week in politics or the race for 2008, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And with us is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and political junkie. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
Also still with us are Ed Gillespie, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, now with Quinn Gillespie and Associates, a bipartisan public affairs firm. That's nice to hear that here in Washington. And Donna Brazil, the campaign manager for Al Gore in 2000, currently chair of the Democratic National Committee's Voting Rights Institute. In the audience at Studio 4A, we have students from universities in the Washington, D.C. area, and we'll be hearing from them as well. But Ken, for a man who was almost president, John Kerry chose a very understated forum at which to make his announcement. There was no more than two or three senators on the Senate floor when he...
Which is not unusual for a debate. I mean, unless it's a vote, you'll often have just two or three senators. But Kerry's announcement came, I guess, a couple of months after his botched joke and 2 years after his botched campaign. But it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. And did it really come as a surprise?
No, not really, because somehow we've anointed... From the beginning, it was Hillary versus the non-Hillary. And once Barack Obama announced that he was going to run, basically many candidates, Evan Bayh of Indiana, perhaps Mark Warner of Virginia, have said that there's no room for a third candidate. Now, John Edwards doesn't agree with that that calculation. But Kerry, the money wasn't there. The support wasn't there. He wanted to run. He probably thought he could have won it. He should have won it, many Democrats feel. Had 60,000 votes in Ohio switched, he would have been the next the president of the United States. So he felt, coming that close, he felt another chance. But the support wasn't there from him, and neither was the money.
Mm-hmm. There are a few other people who think that there's room for another candidate, Dennis Kucinich, Tom Vilsack, among others.
Yeah, better not leave anybody out or they'll kill you. But that's true. but the fact is that given the fact that Hillary Clinton said that she's going to not abide by any kind of federal campaign finance laws, that she'll raise as much as she wants for both the primary campaign and the general election campaign, you either have to be extremely rich or access to a lot of money to run. So all the others, the Vilsacks, the Bill Richardsons, the Bidens, the Dodds, all those people, they have a tough road ahead of them. Plus the fact that these giant states, the California, New Jersey, New York, they may move early in the process, early in February. You have to have a lot of money up front really early to be considered as a serious candidate.
And Illinois, which may be doing it to help their home son.
Well, except they have two favorite sons because Hillary Clinton was born in Illinois. So you have
really?
Two. Yes.
I thought she was a Yankee fan.
A lifelong Yankee fan, yes. Ah.
Let's talk about the trial of Scooter Libby, the former aide to Vice President Cheney. The defense's opening statements had very little to do with whether Libby lied to the FBI agents or not, and a whole lot to do with Karl Rove.
Well, it seems to be a very interesting little dynamic going on in the White House between the Bush camp, which is, of course, is Bush and his top political operative, Karl Rove, and the Cheney camp, and, of course, Louis Libby, the longtime you know, heir apparent, not an heir apparent, but the number two to Dick Cheney, saying basically that he was almost thrown overboard to protect Karl Rove. So this kind of interesting defense going on there. Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, President Bush reached out to Democrats and gave a measured defense of the Iraq War in his State of the Union speech. The next day, Vice President Dick Cheney used a very different tone on CNN. Is pronged attack.
You mean good cop, bad cop? Well, the point is that the administration is not backing down at all of this. What Dick Cheney said, which was, I thought was most interesting, if the Democrat Congress wants to cut off the funding for the Iraq War, let them go ahead and do it. And I think that's almost what the Republicans would love to see happen, because I don't think the American people would support it. But clearly, they don't. It doesn't matter if it's going to be a Biden resolution disapproving of the war or a John Warner Republican resolution disapproving of the war. Dick Cheney basically said, not basically, he said that it really doesn't matter. We're going ahead with the 21,500 extra troops, and that's our decision. We're sticking with it.
Well, let's bring in our guests on this point. I really wanted to ask them about this. The politics of the Iraq War and this resolution, non-binding resolution in the United States Senate. Ed Gillespie, is this something that Republicans are going to resist on the theory that it's bad for morale, a bad moment to look divided in the world?
I think that is a real factor. I think it's the concern about looking like we are divided and the message that sends around the world. But I have to say, you know, the fact is we have men and women, brave men and women, in harm's way. And the Iraq War and our approach to it is less and less a partisan issue. It's a matter of conscience. And there are Republicans who have concerns about the execution of the war, and they're expressing those concerns. John Warner is one of them. He's supportive of the president. He's been respectful of the president and deferential to him. But he's also the former Navy Secretary, former chairman of the Armed Services Committee. He's going to put forward the policies he believes are what's necessary for our national security interest.
Donna Brazile, if Republicans use the filibuster to force the Democrats to get 60 votes for this resolution, are they being obstructionist, or are they sticking to the rules of the Senate?
Well, they will use whatever legislative procedure they possibly can to prevent this resolution from going to the floor. But look, I think this resolution is a very important statement that these senators are trying to make to the president at a time when they believe the American people expressed themselves in November that it's time to transition our mission from combat to training and logistics and to help the Iraqi forces go ahead and defeat the insurgents. I think it's important that we have this debate next week on the Senate floor.
All right. Let's get some questions in from the audience here in Studio 4A. We'll go to the mic on my left.
Good afternoon. My name is Mercy Thomas, and I am a senior at Howard University. I had a brief comment about the rising level in independence and unaffiliated young people in the country. What I see is there's a lot more people who are more comfortable in the gray area of politics, where they don't want to necessarily make a firm decision on a lot of the moral issues that Republicans and Democrats are very strongly about, for instance, gay marriage, the death penalty, and abortion. But my question, directed specifically at Donna Brazile, is regarded with the rise in women and minorities in politics. And with the upcoming presidential elections and primaries, you have Senator Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton, who appear to be the front runners for the campaign. So my question to you is, what do you see in terms of the advancement of more minorities and females with regards to politics in the future?
It's Democratic front runners, I should add, but go ahead.
Absolutely. This is a very exciting time. 9 female governors, 1 African-American governor, 1 Hispanic governor, 16 female senators. If Martin Luther King was alive today and came back and saw Charlie Rangel heading Ways and Means, John Conyers heading up the Judiciary Committee, and all of the other African-Americans and Hispanics and women, including Jim Clyburn, the whip of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, he would be so proud. But he wouldn't. I think Martin Luther King would challenge them to use their power to lift up the other people up, to help the least of these, and to ensure that more women and minorities are able to get into the pipeline of the future. This is a great moment for our country, and I hope and pray that the American people are up to the task and challenge next year, are looking at these candidates, looking at their values, and deciding based on those criteria, not the color of their skin or their gender, whether or not they're fit to serve as Commander-in-Chief.
Hmm. Thank you for that. Let's go to the mic on my right.
Hi. Thank you, sir. I'm Gage from Georgetown, and my question is directed to Ms. Brazile, too. I was just wondering, it's pretty obvious that the Democrats' victory in November, a big key to that was them running moderates in the South. And I was wondering if the Democrats took the next step in the presidential election in 08 and started, if their candidates picked a moderate position on these wedge issues, like, say, abortion, and maybe ran as pro-rights instead of pro-choice, do you think that would go over well in the South, and maybe they could pick up some new ground there?
Ed, before the show's over, we're going to ask you who you like in the Super Bowl. Go ahead, Donna.
Well, first of all, we ran good candidates across the country, not just in the South, but in the Midwest and other parts of the country. I think the appeal this year of Democrats was that we focus on bread and butter issues, that we were able to capture a large segment of voters who were disenchanted with the way the Republicans have run things in Washington, D.C. So I'm optimistic about the future of the party and the fact that we're able to have moderates and progressives and others come together and to support a vision that really, you know, help Americans. I mean, look at the policies that we've just voted on in the Congress, lowering tuition rates and raising the minimum wage. These are issues that all Americans can come together around. So this is a good strategy. And let me just say this. I hope in 2008 the Democrats run a 50-state strategy and not a 15-state strategy. I'm tired of those 15-state strategies that preclude us from going into the South and preclude us from talking to people from across the country.
One thing I want to add, though, is that I think the Democratic Party, the Democratic voter, the electorate is angry. And we saw Bill Clinton in 1992 running as a centrist campaign. I think the voters are far angrier. So talking about a moderate centrist nominee coming out of 2008, I think that's less likely to happen. I think if they equivocate on Iraq and things like that, the voters will make them pay for it. And they'll go. I think the voters are far more to the left than many of the candidates are espousing right now.
They may be on certain issues, but they also would like to see a candidate who can speak to the values and aspirations of our entire country. We're tired of the partisanship in many ways, and we want someone who's strong, someone who will fight and defend our values, and someone who's not afraid to take on the challenges that our nation will face in the future.
We're talking with Donna Brazile, the former campaign manager for Al Gore back in 2000, and with Ed Gillespie, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. With us is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. He's a former political junkie after this show. And his column you can read at npr.org called, strangely enough, The Political Junkie. It should have gone up yesterday, right?
That's correct.
All right. So that's there at npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to the microphone to my left.
Good afternoon. My name is Bran Kroger, and I hail from Destin, Florida, and attend George Washington University. My question is focused, again, on minorities playing a role in this next year's election. We saw immigration become a very big issue in the elections in 06, and a lot of people say that it'll play a large role in 2008. I come from Florida, where the Cuban population is extremely conservative, and a lot of parties use immigration as a catalyst to sort of bring the Hispanic minority in this country to their side. To what role do you think that immigration will play a role in bringing Hispanics on the Republican side or the Democratic side in 2008?
Ed Gillespie, why don't you start?
Well, I think immigration was a big factor in the 06 election cycle. The fact is we suffered a 15 percentage point drop with Hispanic voters on the Republican side. President Bush got 44% of the Hispanic vote in 2004. We got 29% of the congressional Hispanic vote in 2006, and it cost us. The fact is we have to handle immigration properly as a party. I believe the president is largely right on this issue, that Senator McCain is largely right on this issue, that we do need to have a sane, rational policy that allows for guest workers to come here and be able to return to their mm-hmm. countries. We need a path to citizenship, not for those who come here illegally, by the way. I don't support that, but I think we need to make it for people to be able to come in this country, contribute to our economy. My father is an immigrant, came here from Ireland, and the fact is, as you know, a Floridian just became the general chairman of the Republican Party, Mel Martinez, so I think he'll play a constructive role, I think, in helping us to shape that. Immigration reform is one of the issues, maybe the only issue, that became more likely to get enacted with the Democratic Congress taking control than a Republican Congress being in control.
Do you think, Donna Brazile, that it's going to be, if there is legislation passed with the Democratic majorities and a Republican president, do you fear that it's going to be demagogued in the next election from the right?
Oh, no question. I mean, you got Tom Tancred on the Republican side. He's running for president, and he's running on practically one issue, immigration. So, but, you know, I think the president has offered the Democrats a carrot stick on this issue, and I hope that through legislative hearings and some other venues that we can come up with a comprehensive bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get a question in for the mic to my right.
Sure. Hi, my name is Sarah Anselmo, and I'm in the master's MPP program at George Mason, but I'm also a seventh grade history teacher in Fairfax County. And my question is kind of based on that. A lot of my seventh graders are watching the news already, paying attention to the blogs. And my first group of seventh graders that I had 5 years ago will be getting ready to vote in their first presidential campaign in 2008. And my question is, do you worry that I know for us, many of us are turned off by the partisanship, but I kind of see them as the generation after. How much more burnout do you think they will be on partisan politics? And I guess, how do we as adults and role models help them along the way? And what can we do to make that better?
Ken Rudin, you're still in seventh grade. Go ahead.
It's my fourth year in seventh grade. Well, I mean, look, I heard being in the show earlier. I mean, partisanship doesn't, I don't think, was turned off voters. I think the anger turns off voters. I mean, you could be very partisan. You could go to any classic Republican or Democratic National Convention, and there are partisan speeches, but it's more uplifting. But if to say that, you know, Bush sucks or impeach Clinton or get rid of, you know, if it gets nasty and stupid, then I think that's what turns off voters. And there was an earlier question about more and more independents voting, members of parties becoming independents. I think they also become fewer and fewer voters. I think that's one of the problems. Plus the fact that, given the fact that many voters or many people get their news from Jon Stewart, who, you know, people like Jon Stewart they're very funny, but they're also very cynical about politics, understandably so. But the more cynicism that's out there, the fewer and fewer people go out to vote, and that's a big problem.
And let's get one final question in by email. This from Joan in San Francisco. Will Al Gore run for president in 2008? And Donna Brazile, I guess that goes to you too.
Well, you know, I believe Al Gore was cheated out the presidency in 2008. I would disagree with you on that. And if he decides to run, I believe that he will be a top-tier candidate and could win the nomination. But for now, former Vice President Gore is concentrating on winning that Oscar.
I think he's got a better chance there.
Well, let me just, first of all, he lost. Secondly, I think he'll probably win an Oscar. We'll know if he's been on a diet when we see him go accept if he's going to run.
Thank you all. Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, Donna Brazile, and Ed Gillespie, who you just heard there at the end. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. You can catch his political junkie column and his podcast every week on our website at npr.org. Donna Brazile managed the campaign for Gore Lieberman 2000. Ed Gillespie, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. All of them with us here in Studio 4A. And thanks to all of you students for showing up today. We thank you a lot. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.